Hi, and welcome back. This is episode 4 of Hogfish Resonance. In this episode, I will be speaking with Master Gardener Lynn Schaefer. Lynn is the groundskeeper at Beckett Castle, where most of the Hogfish Residency and some of the annual summer performances take place. If you're able, before listening, you might want to head over to the Hogfish website and take a look at some of the photos of the Hogfish grounds just to get a sense of it. You can find that at www.hogfish.org. But if not, I will do my best now to give you a quick verbal snapshot to hold in your mind as I walk through the grounds with Lynn. Beckett Castle sits high on a very rocky, blustery cliff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. When you step through the gate that sits beyond the circular cobblestone car park at the end of Singles Road, you'll find yourself at the base of the home's 30-foot, three-tier stone tower. And in the center section of the tower is a very interesting-looking diamond-shaped window. As the story goes, the home's original owner, Sylvester Beckett, was a spiritualist who built the tower not only to aid in the navigation of ships, but also intended it as a portal for the souls of the deceased. I guess according to the spiritualist tradition, the diamond-shaped windows allow the souls of the dead to pass back and forth from the other side. Beyond the building itself is a 180-degree view of the Atlantic Ocean, and then spreading out in several directions are a series of grassy slopes, each one leading to a different section of the garden. A bunch of very kind of magical little nooks around every corner. While the roses are the main feature across the property, each of these little nooks of the garden are unique and endowed with their own personality and accented with their own cluster of unique plant life. But these other plants are really just the supporting players, and it is the roses that take center stage here at Beckett Castle. At peak bloom, the garden features somewhere around 4 dozen varieties of heirloom roses. It was mid-May when I arrived at Beckett Castle for my interview with Lynn, and the garden was just starting to come back to life after a very strange, long, mixed-weather winter. When I drove up, Lynn was on a ladder pruning one of the rose bushes covering the front entrance, which when the weather is warm and the garden is in full bloom, is a cascade of white and pink roses. Apparently, Nancy Harvey, who was the former owner of Beckett Castle and who was the original designer of the Rose Garden, said she wanted the bushes at the entranceway to feel like roses being poured out of a batter bowl. Which is just to say, the gardens at Beckett Castle, even before Matt and Edwin's arrival, have been treated as a highly curated symphony, continually designed for maximum harmony and aesthetic effect. And if the Hogfish grounds are a symphony, then Lynn Schaefer is most definitely its conductor. As I mentioned at the end of the last episode, I'm a city girl at heart. And when Matt and Edwin suggested that I interview Lynn for the podcast, I really wasn't too sure how to make the connection between the Beckett Castle property and the aims of regenerative arts production. But after spending a couple of hours with Lynn walking around the grounds, the connection became absolutely and completely clear. This was a very special interview for me, and I hope you enjoy it too. Thank you so much for listening. This is Hogfish Resonance. Yeah, so here we are in the gardens of the castle. And how long have you been working these gardens?
I started in 1984. And the previous owner was Nancy Harvey. And she summered in the area and knew the house and took over, I think, in 1983 or so. Mm-hmm. And so there were a few plants here when I got here. Like the Rugosa rose hedge here was here. But other than that, there was almost nothing here. Mm-hmm. But she was the one who was extremely interested in roses. And not just interested. She was obsessed about roses. She loved the roses. She helped work with the roses for a long time. She only would do the pruning. She didn't allow me to touch the roses. I could plant and dig holes, but she needed to do all the pruning. Mm-hmm. And she's the one who did the research for a lot of the, most of the roses. And then it would be a major discussion about what and where and you know, what varieties. So she was more than willing to experiment and see what was hardy and what would grow here along the coast.
Yeah.
And I was pretty new. I had been landscaping on my own, but this was fairly new in my landscape career. And so what Nancy and I met, and it was an amazing first time meeting. I think that we talked solid for 4 hours.
Wow.
And it was just a wonderful connection from the very beginning, and talk about anything and everything. And she was that type of person. She was interested in people.
Yeah.
She was, well, in my view, she wasn't terribly social, but because she was content to be here.
Right.
And so we had a wonderful working relationship. Mm-hmm. And we are had arguments once in a while about mm-hmm. placement.
Sure. Well, that's good.
But
every good relationship needs a few of those.
Yes. No. So it was a really wonderful growing period for me as far as learning what some clients like to see in a garden, and discovering too just how important people are about the garden. It's
yeah.
a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that has reminded me over and over through the years, just the relationship of people to garden and plants, and that dynamic is mm-hmm. really a unique opportunity. Lots of times people don't know so much about nature, but are really wanting to work with someone and explore that side. So Nancy was a great teacher in that way, without trying to be a teacher, but
right.
It was a wonderful experience. So that was, she passed away, 2000 something.
Yeah.
What's this? This is 2023.
I think it is. I don't know. I think it was
2016.
Fairly, oh, okay. So just a couple of years before Edwin and Matt bought
yes,
the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, and she was definitely less involved in her later years, but
yeah.
it was a long term relationship.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the early days she showed me another property where the family had gardened, and she said they'd had a gardener there for 40 years, and I thought, wow, that just does not happen anymore.
Yeah.
And then kind of here
yeah,
I am.
But here you are. How many years are you into it now?
I think this is 39.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
So you know this garden.
We've dug a lot of holes, yeah, and moved a lot of rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, every single time without fail, when I drive in, it's just exciting to be here. There's a real energy about this property. And part of it was Nancy and Edwin and Matthew now, but you know, some pieces of land are like that. There's a different kind of energy. And I think of it as magical, but I don't want to sound hokey about it.
Right.
It's just a real visceral experience.
Yeah.
And the site, the ocean, there's a lot of drama here. There's a lot of beauty.
Yeah.
And every year we would spend a lot of time primping and prep, getting ready for the major show, getting roses tied up and pruned. And then it would just be Nancy and I walking around the garden and just enjoying that moment. It was always, always a special time.
And the major show with Nancy was, which she would have people come in like for a garden walk. Is that what it was?
Maybe friends.
Okay.
But it was
yeah.
never open to the public.
Okay.
She was pretty private.
Yeah, right.
And I never knew of being open to the public.
Yeah.
She never allowed a garden tour.
Yeah.
It was her space.
Which is a big contrast to what you're working with now.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of, one of the first big groups here, the descent of 100 people was mm-hmm. More than a little overwhelming for me.
Yeah, that was probably the first Kegs and Roses of a couple of years ago.
The second one.
Oh, it was the second one. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
It was shocking.
Can you say more about that? I'd love to hear, like, as I can imagine, and you could confirm whether this is how you felt or differently. these are your babies. This is sort of like a space that you've been so involved with as like a closed environment for 40 years. And suddenly the world is kind of being let in here, tromping around. And that must be a really strange feeling.
It was. And I didn't think it was going to be like that. I've been in group tours before, but I'm used to hearing the sound of the ocean and being able to converse individually and answer questions, but then all of a sudden the bus is unloaded and came through the gate. And I panicked. Sorry. I had to.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
I understand.
It was too much.
Yeah.
It's hard to be prepared for that moment, I guess,
right,
when the crowd bursts through the gate.
Yeah. Were you concerned about people tromping on things or any damage?
No,
or
just, I wasn't concerned about
that.
It's
more just sort of like an energetic kind
Yeah.
of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never done bus tours for...
Right. And it sounds like so different than Nancy. I mean, the polar
yes.
opposite of
polar
what...
Polar opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's wonderful if people enjoy it because it's a special place.
Yeah.
But... smaller groups a little easier.
Right. So speaking of people walking around, can you give me a tour?
Would you like?
I would love a tour.
Okay. Let me get my spade.
Okay.
I always walk with my spade.
All right. Walk with your spade. Nice.
Well, we could go. It's nice to be in the sun. We could go down this
Sure. way. How many types of roses are there, do you know, on this property?
Well, I was just counting up this morning. There's about 40. But I think over the years, we've, through trial and error, there's been more than 100 that we've tried.
Yeah. But currently
varieties.
Here, 40-ish.
Yeah, I would say 40-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is Climbing America.
And
I think it's the fourth or fifth climber we've had on the towers. Again, searching for ones that can withstand the wind.
Why
this one? Belle Poite Vine and... Blanc Duber de Cobert are the two rugoses here. Lavender Lassie is here. That's always been a good bloomer, but mm-hmm. it had quite a lot of dieback this year. There's a mix of Gallica roses in here. Eglantine is a old variety that has fragrant foliage that's really nice. Wicked thorny, but the foliage is nice. Mm-hmm. English shrub roses, modern hybrids in here that are recurrent bloom. Abraham Darby Heritage is one of the early David Austin roses that's a good performer. This is one of my favorite roses up here. This climber is Paul's Himalayan Musk.
Ooh, it's a big, big bush.
That's one plant.
Wow.
And it has one big show. There's clusters of little florets of pale pink flowers that are very sweet. And then it's done.
One
night only. Yep.
And what is that, like 15 feet high, 16, 17?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And wide, you know, it's probably...
Yeah.
Almost 30 feet broad up there.
Yeah.
So I can't get up there. It just kind of clambers along the way it wants to.
Right.
So, and again, I like it for that one-time show, that one performance only, and then you wait till next year. So everything does not have to be all the time,
right,
which is kind of what we're used to now. Yeah. You can get any sort of food anytime you want,
yeah,
buy anything anytime you want, especially with mail order. And you know, nature doesn't work like that.
Right. Yeah. You get it when you get it.
Yep.
And a day before.
Yep. And then you appreciate it when it's there.
Right.
So.
Yep.
People used to think that roses wouldn't grow in Maine. There's a preconceived idea lots of times about what Maine is like, this wilderness area,
right,
which it's not anymore.
Yeah, right.
So to prove that roses can grow here, that's fun.
Yeah.
But here you can see the kind of blistering that happens from the salt.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of a gray film.
Oops, sorry.
Gray film on it.
And then on the leeward side, it's still green. So for a while, it will show good growth, but that doesn't always.
Yeah. How do you know how far back to prune it?
Well, that's a good question, because here I've already kind of cut back. Here you see it's brown.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you follow that stem down, oh, there's a bud that started okay. way down. Yep. And then that's a bigger growth down there.
So somehow I'm feeling like this metaphor of, or the act of pruning has some sort of metaphorical implications and application for regeneration and regenerative arts. Is that anything that
I hadn't thought about it, that about the pruning, but I guess that brings up the topic of hogfish.
Yeah.
And the role of hogfish and hogfish being here. And I think when Edwin and Matthew were still first talking about hogfish, I just really admired that attitude of regenerative art, but also inclusion and all of art. And it was really an honor that they would see the garden as a part of that, because yes, I see it that way too, but I never really equated it or as a part of the fine arts. You get dirty, you get scratched up. It's to me, it's about the plants. It's not, and how to make the plants work together or show their best. But for Edwin and Matthew, they were seeing more, and that was really an eye opener for me to think that way. I just have to say too that for one of the first performance here, where there was dance and voice and music of instrumental music and in the garden, and it was beautiful, beautiful. And then towards the end of the performance, they had a period where all of the performers were together and dancing and singing and piano. And it was really this moment where I kind of got it, where it just felt like the wind was reacting. The wind was moving the trees, and the ocean had its own sound and waves, and everything was reacting with itself, and people were too. And there was a few seconds, maybe not even, maybe it was 2 seconds, I don't know. It was like this window opened, and you could see that there was that interaction was possible, and there was hope, and just the idea of being surrounded by beauty and that humans could be a part of that. It was quite a wonderful experience though for that.
Like a lot of people, no, I should stop the rustling. Yeah,
no,
I love this. Like a lot of people, I'm so used to when I go to see theater or dance or anything, it's I go inside a building.
Yes.
Maybe at best, I'm in a outdoor amphitheater or something like that, and that's a new and exciting thing.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the things I'm eager to learn in all this is that connection that you were talking about. Why it's so important, and well, let me put it this way, making this a very long question, but it goes deep.
It does.
There's on Instagram, there's actually these folks called Windborne Singers who go around to acoustically beautiful. Have you heard of these
no.
guys? I'll show it to you, if you want to check.
Oh, good.
So they go into different acoustical spaces indoors and they sing.
Oh, really?
And it's glorious.
Yeah.
And because the acoustics are just so. So one of the challenges I would imagine of performing outside is that you have the wind, you're like quote unquote competing with the ocean, with the birds, with nature. So it's not a purely almost sterilized environment.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily mean sterilized in a bad way, but it's
controlled.
Right, controlled. Perfect, exactly. So I was sort of curious from your perspective, when folks here are performing here in the gardens, I've got to figure, A, it has its own kind of amazing acoustics, And it also brings in a resonance that is different than being inside a building, obviously, but there, whether it's a literal oral acoustic resonance or a spiritual resonance or.
Well, that is a good question. And I think I don't really know how the performers viewed it. I think everybody enjoyed it, yes, but I didn't have this kind of discussion with them, so I don't know from their experience if they're accustomed to being on stage mm-hmm. in a controlled building environment, what it would be like to not have that. It seems like it would be fun, but I don't know that for yeah. sure from their point of view. But it seemed at the moment that it was inclusive and we're all in the same boat. You know, it's not like we sit and, like, for example, you know, usually you are in the audience, you quietly watch someone perform and then you clap and then maybe there's the next round,
yeah.
next performance. But for this day, for that day, it just seemed like it was, there wasn't a separation at some point. It all came together as one. And it, you know, that's probably just me being nature boy, but I think it was those trees up there and seeing them move with the wind, that wind and the music. And I just thought, wow, there it is. You know, they are reacting to the voices too, or just in celebration with that moment. Because it was a day like this, sounds of the ocean, a little more breeze, and it was a special time for us humans. And that's been a new experience for me. And I credit Hogfish for opening up possibilities. And I think, to me, that's the possibilities, I think, is one word that I always feel with the Hogfish conversation. There's potential. There's hope. And we kind of need that right now.
Hope for anything in particular?
Hope for human kindness. Hope for enjoyment with the natural world. And I think the roses can teach us how responsive they can be to human interaction, because they depend on it mm-hmm. in lots of ways. Pruning, fertilizing, but also just the power of regenerative growth. Like now, some of these roses, they're back to nubbins. There's not much left. But by the end of the summer, they're going to be back to whatever shrubby form they want to be. Their genetic makeup is telling them to come back.
Yeah.
And I don't think humans have that.
Mm. We have to be reminded.
We have to be reminded, yeah, for yeah. sure. And wake up.
Yeah.
So I think that's the purpose of the garden and the landscape. And of course, how many scores of music have been in celebration of nature and painting? And you know, the source is really not the painting itself, but it was before that. It was nature, beauty of nature. And now it's just so easy to be away from that, be away from the natural world, or have a drive-by view of 5 minutes of nature. Whereas for me, I feel lucky. I live with the season. Season changes. It's not always comfortable, but it's how I want to live my life and to be a part of that. So I feel lucky in that way.
Did you get a chance to interact with last season's residential artists and you know, give them tours of the garden or get a sense of their...
It wasn't so much tours because they were preparing for their own performances. Yeah. There was some conversation, and it was mostly the atmosphere that they could absorb.
Yeah.
And because they were performing in that atmosphere too. And they could recognize the specialness of the place.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I've done a couple of interviews with folks who were here last season.
Oh, really?
One being Maria Brea, who is a soprano,
dark
hair.
Yes, yes. I don't know all the names.
She just gushed about how wonderful it was to be here, to be in the landscape.
Oh.
I think her comment was, she's from Venezuela, but she has roots in Trinidad. And she said, I had no idea that someplace outside the Caribbean could be so beautiful.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
So it penetrates, I think, especially for folks from New York. And then the very last interview I did, which was with a guy, Billy Bustamante, who has not been here yet. And one of the last things he said was, you know, I think it is so great that artists from New York have an opportunity to be in nature and
to really
suck that in. So I think it's one of those things where, for some people, maybe for those of us who are locals, it's easy to go, yeah, whatever, the ocean. But for somebody who's not immersed it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my impression anyway.
Well, it was interesting. When my son moved to New York, I said, you have to have a view of at least one tree out your window.
Dad says.
And he does.
Good. In so many ways in the arts, there's a striving, as we talked about, for a controlled moment, but to let go of that desire for control and to be performing in a space where the elements and the things that are totally out of our control become part of it is kind of awe-inspiring.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason why I love being here. A lot of gardening I see now is a matter of control. You know, we humans characteristically want to control their environment.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that we can control it. I think you definitely can learn and work with it, but controlling, that's not what I want to do. But the flowers they're ephemeral, they last a short time, and then they're done. So I think that's important, is when you talk about performing outside, to have a sense of that inclusion and that you're just a small part.
Yeah.
You're not the big part.
Right.
You're not the master of the universe.
Right. Which I love personally, but I know for some people it's a little unsettling. Although
I think so.
That letting, like, you know, it's that surrender kind of feel.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If a seagull screeches right when you're hitting your most practiced high note, there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, and to think, like, okay, why did the seagull screech at that moment? You know, maybe the seagull was celebrating too. Oh. They were expressing themselves.
Yeah.
So it can be, for humans, a very egocentric experience of trying to make it their way. And that's not fair.
Right. That's not as much fun either.
Not as much fun. You definitely don't learn as much.
Really? The unexpected is the... the flavor, the spice.
Yep, the spice. Mm-hmm. So that idea has been more prominent since Hogfish and how people view the outdoors. And the disconnect is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's my role in life, is to help guide that disconnection of people. But that's usually people who are willing,
right?
People that I work with. And there's a lot of people who are not interested,
yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but that's that's me.
Has being a part of now Hogfish and the sort of Hogfish intent and ethos and atmosphere made you, has it caused you to look at the garden differently? Are you doing anything differently now than you were before Matt and Edwin arrived?
Well, let me think. Basically, I think it's the same. Mm-hmm. The systems are the same. The pattern of the season is the same. I think one thing that I look at more is more places for people to sit and pause, more social spaces defined like that. This bench was never here, for example. And so there was never really a place to sit and enjoy here. But, and I guess thinking about how to introduce people to a landscape or nature in general. This is their moment to come and visit and spend 2-3 hours here, and then they leave. And so what do you take away from that experience? And it's not just the obvious view of a tremendous blooming rose garden. There's more to that. There's that visceral feel of the landscape. And it's easy to, I think, to not look any further. Just take what's most apparent.
Well, how would you coach people to pay attention and have the sort of full experience of this place?
I think it's best to walk around slowly. I think it's best to, in a small group or by yourself, and just sit down once in a while and just listen. And listen to the ocean and the wind and the warmth of the earth, and combined, it adds up. The earth is moving at a much slower pace than humans do. So it takes a while to slow down. Some people never do. And just listening to the different sounds, the highs and lows of the ocean sound and the drama of the ocean and crescendo of a wave and the dance of the trees. So to have a human dancer here, and there was a moment where it felt like they were all doing the same reaction to the wind and it's just an enveloping moment, I guess, where united as all beings.
I think just as an outside person, it's fun for me to hear your story about going from someone who is very much sort of keeping the garden closed and is a very enclosed space, except for maybe a few friends. And now you're in the 40 years later, you're in a position where things are opening up. And
it is interesting after all this time.
Yeah.
You know, when I started gardening, I thought, this is great. I can just do plants. I can work, I can garden, I can plant, I wouldn't have to talk to anybody. And that is totally not true now.
Yeah.
I long ago realized where it's the people connection that is really makes it more special.
Yeah.
And I guess I just have to credit that moment with Hogfish, that first season, where just to see that window open ever so briefly, just the realm of possibility that I had never really felt. I've seen it, but that's not the same as feeling it. And everybody's view is a little bit different about their relationship with the earth or their property.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way with Edwin and Matthew, that they really didn't know much about gardening, and they have enthusiastically jumped into it. And that is a brave person.
Yeah.
this is a big garden. There's a lot of unknowns, and I'm still learning them too.
Mm-hmm.
And they have responded, and it's been a wonderful experience that way.
I know they think of you as an incredible mentor and teacher in this regard. So, you know, I think it does help to have somebody teach us how to see. I mean, I think it is a sad truth that we forget how to see in the busy rush of our daily lives.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I suppose the same thing can apply to any of the art forms. You have to learn how to paint, maybe, right.
Or
how
we haven't
dance,
even how to view
music,
a painting. Yeah.
How to view it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so the more information you have, the more appreciation you can also have. Yeah. And I suppose the garden is the same way. I just don't always think about it that way. That's how, I guess now that we talk about it, that is how I see it.
During our email exchange, you were saying you see yourself as a conductor. And as you're talking, I'm like, oh, I really understand now what he's talking about in terms of being a conductor, because it's like, okay, this will bloom, and then this will bloom, and then it's almost like a wave.
Yes, yes. And it's very often looked that way for a perennial garden, where you want early bloom, mid-season, late season, and to try to have something happening, interacting all the time, as well as with color combination and form, and that's a little more commonly discussed or studied. But for for the landscape in general, it's still the same thing, where form and what am I saying? Form and new growth, because I guess this is really a living performance, and it changes every year, and it changes every day. And so the conductor part happened with Hogfish too. With I get it.
Mm.
You know, I don't feel superior to these plants. I'm just trying to coordinate the plants and make the conditions right and encourage them. And now, as we're talking, I'm just seeing, oh yeah, that's responding. I pruned that, and that's filling out, and that's good. That's a nice form, and that tree. And so it's the individuals make up the larger picture.
Right. Yeah. Again, like putting on a performance piece, you got to work with the individuals, and then how do the individuals integrate with the rest of the whole?
Yes, and yeah, here for sure with the roses, where they have this peak bloom time that lasts a few days, and so. You know, it's enough, I think, to coordinate performers, and they are doing their peak performance also. And then to have the vagaries of nature and to try to combine at that moment too, it's a little anxiety, but it's excitement too. I think it's going to work. I think it's going to happen. This will be great. So I think that with Hogfish, it was the idea of the structure of music with beginning, crescendo, the end of a piece, and how all these elements come together with all the different instruments to make that sound. And what do we have here? Wind and sun and rain and water and rock and...
The whole orchestra.
Yeah, it's all here.
Yeah.
It's also something that you don't realize as much until you think about it in retrospect and think, oh my God, that was really a special, real moment. The trees were talking. Mm. They had something to celebrate too. So finally, somebody noticed. All these people here.
So you're glad for the people, even though it feels weird to you to have a crowd.
Yes, yes. It was wonderful to have other people enjoy the garden and being outside and listening to music. Whether or not they had that same kind of experience as myself,
yeah.
Probably not. But they can have their own experience. That is the beauty of humans, because they're different.
Right.
Sometimes it's not so beautiful. But
Sometimes it's challenging and beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, that's the human dance. That's the human dance.
It feels like I've learned a lot. After all this time, I've learned a lot.
Well, thank you so much. You really are clearly such a valuable part of this enterprise and this endeavor and this thing that they're creating. And it makes so much sense why they think so highly of you and why they were so eager for me to talk to you. So I really appreciate it. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah.
I'm really honored that they want to include what I do. Because I don't, how can I take credit for the roses blooming? They're going to bloom that time of year. They might be bloom better sometimes than others, but they're doing it. I mean, there's nothing that I'm really doing.
Well, again, I love your metaphor of being the conductor. I mean, certainly you would have an orchestra would be playing music anyway, but would they be playing it as harmoniously
well,
without
their
conductor?
Somebody's going to be off key. So,
you're keeping all the roses on key.
Oh, okay.
And the wind makes its presence known.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you for being interested. Yeah, I'll just move back to my thorny room.
Okay.
Take care.
See ya.
Pretty sweet, right? If you'd like to experience the Hogfish Grounds for yourself at some point, every summer the annual Kegs and Roses event is held during peak bloom. Attendees can stroll around the gardens and see outdoor performances by some truly talented humans. You'll find more information about that on the events page of the Hogfish website. For our next episode, I'll be speaking with Audrey Luna. In addition to being on the Artistic Advisory Board at Hogfish, Audrey has spent the last two summers teaching Alexander Technique to the residential artists. Audrey and I talk about the ins and outs of Alexander Technique as an essential training tool for the Hogfish ethos, and also as a means by which audiences and performers can meet one another on the same energetic plane. Here's a clip from our talk.
The philosophy of Hogfish is to be a regenerative arts company, and the regenerative arts extends to the artists and then the connection to community and nature and, you know, and that regenerative process really does come from a place of connection. It's not, it doesn't happen by itself nowadays. And so I think we really are committed to regeneration because it's the healing that we all need to be doing all the time.
Yeah. Well, again, I love you bringing it into the audience as well, because most audience members don't get a taste of that at all, because not everybody knows what it is. So it's kind of fun having us all be on at least a little bit of equal footing in that way.
Yeah, and it's that connection. Again, you know, that's what's regenerative about theater. When you can connect with your audience, I mean, you know, as you know, actors need the audience as much as the audience needs the actors. It is. When you can create that kind of an atmosphere, then you have the miracle of theater.
So please do tune in for that conversation. In the meantime, be well. This is Hogfish Resonance.